Silence! Silence! Silence in the court of cyber! This episode is all about resilience. Cyber resilience. Ransomware downtime averages 24 days and costs can top millions. Yet many organizations treat backup as an afterthought. Why is that? We will dive deeply into cyber resilience with Ravi Baldev Singh from Commvault, the company behind unified platform that secures, detects, and rapidly recovers data across any cloud or workload. That's a big promise, yes? Ravi is a CISP with two decades in security and data management. He will explain in our show today how CISOs can align backup, security, and compliance to keep the business or even nation running, even after attack. So if you like this episode, then please, 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 please like, follow, comment, and tell your friends. If you have any topic interest that you would like for us to talk about, then let us know. Write us an email to address cybercast@neverhack.com or find me from LinkedIn. I'm Ronnie, just for you to know. That's all about me yapping. So, hello, Ravi.
Hi, Ronnie. Thanks a lot for having me in your court. I'm excited and nervous.
Yes, nervous because you are under oath now. You have to speak the truth and only truth, right? So, who are you, Ravi? What do you do?
First of all, it's a big honor to be here on your show, Ronnie, and I hope the listeners can get something out of it. I am a risk practitioner by profession. Professionally, I'm the head of systems and sales engineering at Commvault for emerging markets, which is a cluster of 100 plus countries. I'm based in Dubai, UAE, got a team of engineers who work with clients day in, day out, to address their cyber resilience needs, wants, and gaps. So that's me. And having done a CISSP just helped me tie together a lot of concepts which I had witnessed practically in my own personal life and experience. But what got me in this sphere, interestingly, is not security of the data kind, but rather a search for asymmetric returns in the world of finance and public markets. And there is a very nice phrase of the asymmetricity of financial world, which can be orthogonally applied to the world of information security, interestingly. So I consider myself as a risk practitioner using some derivative knowledge from the world of finance. That's me.
Cool. So you have an extensive background in finance and in risk. So you have been here for 20 years. So you have been a practitioner for over 20 years. What has changed during that time? So where did you start from and what is the reality today? So what have you witnessed changing?
There's so much that has changed across various industries, Ronnie, whether it's banking, finance, 24/7 government services in city states, whether it's telecom, whether it's government services, as well as defense, AI, machine learning. Cloud has come in hot and heavy. Cloud has actually moved a lot of data gravity out of computer rooms and data centers somewhere out there. And customers and clients of every shape and size, every color, simply assume that their data is, well, secure. It's not. So that has changed. Awareness has changed. And 20 years ago, you would.
So you have a personal story of you have a personal horror story. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I joined a bank many years ago. The year was 2008, if I still remember. I was newly married, and getting that 3 a.m. call from the head of information security to be in the office within half an hour and to, well, get going with what happened, taught me some interesting lessons. What were those lessons? You can't be adequately prepared. And interestingly, in 2007, viruses were all around, but ransomware was not. At least it was rare. There was no state actor and wiperware, which wipes organizations completely, destroys them from an IT perspective. Those things weren't there. And there was a lot of learning from an asymmetric warfare perspective. So my personal horror story, as you put it, the CISO, who was in the reporting line, has to get it right every single time. The bad actors have to get it right only once. So this entire sphere of cybersecurity is stacked against you as a risk practitioner, as an IT professional. So you have to have all the tools, techniques, procedures, talent, learnings, lessons in your favor. Everything has to go right every single time. And you know what's worse,
yeah.
Your unfortunate incidents are out in the news, but your wins are not.
Yes,
that's
our daily business in cybersecurity. So it's a tough job for just one person. You need to have a team behind you, and you need to have a board, managers with you on this adventure. So today we are experiencing, or kind of like thinking, that data resilience should be a part of strategy. So how do you persuade boards that backup and recovery are not just IT plumbing, but, you know, a competitive necessity?
That's a very good question, and very timely one as well. The board needs to ask and answer one question. As a collective, what is our survival time objective as a business? What is that control that needs to be functional 100% of the time when every other security system and control has been defeated due to a cyber attack or due to an insider attack? And they will find backup and recovery and the necessity of having a golden copy is the only way to survive. And that's not just an IT problem. It's a business competitive issue as well.
So how do you quantify, or how do you explain that to the board? Because on board level, you have to show fact, figures, numbers for them to understand the risk impact.
Again, there are so many reports out there. The Verizon data breach report, or breach reports from IBM, from PricewaterhouseCoopers, from Gartner, IDC, Forrester Group. So many analyst reports go back to making one statement, which is a borrow from Gartner. You will be breached. So you need to be able to embrace the breach now and plan for it. You need to operate your business in a way, assuming you are already impacted. How do you become anti-fragile? That can only be done, interestingly, Ronnie, to that comment, through experiential learning. Imagine bringing the board of directors, the CFO, the CEO in a room and getting them to do something called as a business level tabletop exercise. A hypothetical cyber attack that has hijacked the systems of a bank or an airline or a government entity. And now let's look at the human dynamics through the entire cyber resilience recovery chain. That experiential learning is the only way to induce the respectability for backup recovery, the necessity for cyber resilience, and the fear of not being prepared in that event.
But how do you make that feel real? So how do you make it real enough for the audience?
They will be given a particular set of scenarios. We call it within Commvault minutes to meltdown, where we bring in a number of entities, customers, we put them on round tables, and each table has a tabletop exercise situational scenario across the board. And we have a very effective media presentation that runs them through a cyber attack and a hacker demanding Bitcoin. And the clock is ticking. And they have to figure out what they're going to do. They have to figure out their choices. Someone has to talk to the regulators. Someone has to talk to the board of directors. And someone has to drive the cyber recovery operations within the due time so the survival time of the business can be met. If you're a publicly listed company, shares traded on stock exchange, someone has to talk to your market regulator to tell them, we are probably going to go offline. We might have to declare bankruptcy. So it's experiential learning through real world scenario planning.
Within that scenario planning, do you also use PR as or kind of external people who actually play the regulator and PR and news role?
We certainly do. We have people from across the board at different tables in that experiential learning we call as minutes to meltdown and Commvault, and they learn off of each other. And guess what? They realize the human factor is what they have discounted heavily, because you can make whatever investments you want in technology, you can get the best in there, but the people need to have the practice. They need to have the muscle memory, and that's the real core. Muscle memory during a cyber attack is a saver.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely so. So zero trust in backup. Zero trust is a big word. Is a big thing. It's really hard to implement, and even large companies struggle with that. So even companies like Google and Amazon struggle with zero trust. So what does zero trust actually mean in backup?
First off, who you talk to, they will have their own definitions of zero trust. I would emphatically say, Ronnie, to your listeners in this court, that zero trust is not a product. It's not a bunch of technologies. It's a mindset. It means trust no one, trust nothing, verify everything, and have a log that can help you walk through what happened, when, by whom, and what was the impact? What was the outcome? So if I'm a data protection specialist, to your question, I log into Commvault as a software, as an example, that is backing up the data of a bank, and I have a malicious intent. I want to destroy the backups because maybe the bad actors are threatening me with harm to my family, and that has happened. Now I'm required by this group to execute cyber destruction on the backup solution. The Commvault engine will prevent me from doing harm through immutability, through retention locking, through technical and procedural aspects, which are nothing but zero trust implementation for the last line of defense. That's your recovery solution.
So you just explained that you have been in a situation or are aware of a situation where a systems engineer or backup responsible people have been threatened physically, their family has been threatened physically, and have been required to do some malicious things on the job workplace. Can you talk about this a little bit more?
There is empirical evidence and a number of pressers out there of incidents that happen in the West. There is empirical evidence of Tesla. One of the employees was offered millions to insert a USB stick on a computer in one of the gigafactories, for example. And the employee, out of moral higher ground impulsions, reported this, and FBI in the US was engaged. But yes, bad actors don't play by any rules, Ronnie. The things that you post on social media, the pictures of your kids, the locations of your things that you do in a day or your family does, a party, an outing, a grocery shopping, going off to the mall. People post a lot of stuff. And if I am motivated as a bad actor to get in and cause harm, there are no rules for me. I will find that weak spot, which will not be a technology, by the way. It will be the human willing to do something as long as I press the buttons. assuming this happens, that's where you need zero trust in a company.
So what would you say that would be like the first best practice controls any CISO can deploy now, like the kind of first things in working out the zero trust?
First off, measure your survival time objective end to end, from total hypothetical destruction of your IT department and data assets down to total relaunch of your minimum viable organization. What does that mean? For example, you might be having thousands of applications, business applications in your business. You really must recover 25 to get back on your feet quickly. The rest can wait. That's very, very key. Second, lock down your backup recovery systems so that even the administrators with what is known as elevated privilege are not in a position to cause harm, either for money reasons or they are under some kind of familial harm compulsion by bad actors. Third, assume you are already breached. Assume you have ransomware in your network. Assume you have a bad actor sniffing around. What is the thing that you would do in an isolated environment to recover your data and to test, to verify, to validate that you are able to execute cyber recovery quickly through muscle memory? Finally, everyone needs to know what they're supposed to do. There should be no guesswork. There should be no learning during a real cyber attack. Rather, it should be, Ronnie, oh, thank you, Mr. Bad Actor, for coming in. I know what to do. We are the blue team who are responsible for bringing up the minimum viable organization, because my red team, who are responsible for the networks, the defenses, and ethical hacking, have not necessarily delivered the goods, let's say. That is what needs to happen.
So in the COMBOL space, you have a concept called clean room and cloud rewind recovery. So what is a clean room? What does that mean? Is it like a surgery room, or is it like a space lab?
Interesting you bring a surgery in here. Imagine after a surgery, a long surgery, the patient has to be taken back to the general ward. But the patient is not taken directly. She is taken first to a post-operating recovery room, where the surgeon checks on her, the best nurses check on her. There is whatever necessary precautions to make sure she's okay every 15, 20 minutes, every half an hour, and so on. And the doctors do the round and check on that patient. That is your clean room. In the world of IT, I can't trust my production environment. I can't trust my disaster recovery environment. I need something which is completely disaggregated from me, which is not in my control. It is within my control to use. It is not within my control of infecting it, but yet within my control for using it, consuming it. That is the Commvault clean room, which a customer can provision and consume within minutes on public cloud, such as Azure, such as Amazon, and very soon Google. Oh, by the way, a customer can build their own clean rooms within their own computer rooms. Not a problem. We can help them with that. The idea is simple. If I'm under the gun, if I'm under pressure because of regulations such as DORA in Europe, such as NIS2, also in Europe, I have to produce for my auditors evidence that I have executed cyber recovery. And I can't necessarily do that in production environments because it's chaotic. Clean room gives me that little space to execute cyber recovery verifiably, very nicely, quickly, and repeatedly. And if I fail, I can wipe it and I can start again, as long as I know what I'm doing, as long as I follow my recovery runbooks. That's
so the clean room. So please, can you just walk us through an incident? Because this this clean room concept fits really good in the resolution of incident. So how do you use that clean room in action?
You take me back to the Maersk incident several years ago. You may have heard of Maersk Oil, Maersk Group, Maersk Shipping. There was the Petya and not Petya. You may have heard of the Beiersdorf incident in Germany, cyber attacks, Petya, not Petya. Beiersdorf is not known, but when you mention Nivea cream, everybody knows Nivea cream, or most people know the face cream, Nivea. Beiersdorf manufactures that. It's a chemical organization. These organizations were brought down to their feet. I was in Qatar, one of the Middle East countries. I get an urgent call from one of the entities who wanted systems shutdown documentation urgently within 5 minutes. And I'm in a car, in a taxi on the road. I orchestrated that and got them the document. And I read about Maersk Oil the next day. They wanted to shut down the backup systems so that the infection doesn't reach their backup recovery platforms. That was the world. Now, when I look back, Maersk Oil, Maersk Group, had an offline copy of their identity systems, Active Directory, in a remote location in Ghana, in Africa. So that region lost power some days back, and fortunately was not impacted. How lucky they were. So they, yes, they flew were very people lucky. Down. They flew people down to get hold of that copy from Ghana to regenerate Active Directory so users can log back into their systems. Now, only if Maersk had a clean room, they would be able to bring up their Active Directory within minutes. They would be able to test if the Active Directory is good and then bring that back online. There are lots of technicalities around this. There's a very nice way of verifying before going back in production. You can't do that in production. You are under the gun. Clean room enables you to do exactly those things quickly and painlessly. That's the intent.
Yes, the Maersk incident, that was a real huge one, and they had a lucky break there because of the Ghana office that had lost their power a couple of days back, and they flew in there with a small airplane from UK, if I recall. No, there's one guy who was sent out to get that hard drive from Ghana, and it was like a 10-hour one-way trip, 10 hours back to recover that AD copy of the of Maersk. So that's like a movie. That's like a movie story, I would say. It's a thing that an enterprise would very much like to not do. So, but what is a rollback? Point in time rollback. So
another tie-in story before I come down to rollback capability is a technical function which helps a lot in cyber recovery, known as Active Directory forest level recovery. Many years ago, you need to follow 37 plus pages and hundreds of steps from Microsoft for Active Directory. Today, we have forest level recovery to enable customers to execute whatever they need to quickly and in a clean room or even back on their cloud. Now, Cloud Rewind is another such function, Ronnie, which is very interesting. There's a lot of cloud native apps out there, which means applications born in the cloud, which means there are thousands of components working together behind the scene that you're not even aware of. It's extremely complicated. It's not like backing up Oracle or SQL, and hey, if it's corrupt, I will restore from tapes. It is a number of software-defined routers, firewalls, Route 53 on Amazon, Lambda configuration functions on AWS, some Azure blob, some GCP project IDs. Now, this for board of director means nothing. For the board of directors, it's, hey, my core banking, my billing, my CRM, my mediation systems for the telco towers, my CDR captures in the world of telecom for the regulatory authorities, my messaging applications. That's the business lingo. What if I'm able to map all the dependencies out graphically and execute a refined function, again within minutes, rather than waiting for months? Who is capturing all these dependencies? No human can do that, because if there are 100 components talking to each other, there is a mathematically impossible problem, 100 factorial, which runs into billions. Are you seriously telling me there are humans in your IT department that can map out billions of interactions on the cloud and on-premise and bring them up together? Good luck with that. That's when Commvault acquired this company called Appranix, April last year, and we launched Cloud Rewind functionality to meet the stringent cyber recovery criteria of the complex world of cloud-native apps. Welcome to true cyber recovery. Good luck attempting it without Cloud Rewind.
Yes, that is a big thing, because the dependencies and the IT is changing, well, I would say daily, small incremental changes in configurations, small incremental, changes overall, and it is really, really hard to, for a human, impossible to track all of those. And if you put that into like a business talk, then yes, it's really, really, really hard to. Okay, sorry. Then you just talk about applications and how applications will be affected. So how business will be affected. Yeah.
So every organization is chasing compliance or being asked for compliance by regulators. Can compliance be a business enabler? And how can business directly convert regulatory requirements to a business enabler? You know, my point here is to ask from a resilience point of view and to make it in simple terms, how to make backups sexy.
Well, in the past, having worked with auditors in banking side, it's always a tussle. It is a professional fight. IT infrastructure people and data custodians are doing everything they can. And now you have people coming in to validate or prove that things are broken. One thing, and you said one interesting thing, how to make backups sexy again. But before you do that, make your governance and risk teams your best friends if you're a risk practitioner or an IT professional. You can't be having those fights anymore. You would join up with them to create awareness of risk around you and above you. And then you would explain to them in a nuanced way, the business survival time objective is not a firewall sitting on a network preventing attacks. It's the collective of practitioners within IT and security and audit coming together to solve recovery, rebuild, and relaunch of business applications. How do you make backups and recovery sexy? Go back to minimum viability. What do I need to relaunch after a cyber attack? Do I have a golden copy of my data? And then silence in the room, where no one can actually say, yes, we do. Because why would anyone jeopardize their careers and declare something they're not sure of? That's when the top people and the CISO would come together and say, now I see the problem. We need a backup system that is anti-fragile, that is fail-safe, that is the last control the business will rely on when every of my security controls stands defeated. You see, security controls don't fail. They get defeated because the goalpost keeps moving. That's where you need to have a very solid goalkeeper that covers all the boundaries of the goalpost, sort of horizontally challenged. So mm-hmm. No goals can be scored. That's what's needed.
So What KPI should be tracked to prove ROI on resilience investments?
At minimum, two. One, what is my minimum viable organization? What does it look like in terms of data capital and data gravity? What do I recover? Is it a SQL database? Is it MongoDB? Is it SAP? Is it on-premise? Is it on Azure Cloud? Where? That's number one. Map out minimum viability. Number two, have a very clear definition from the board of directors, the business understanding of survival time objective. Again, the time taken from total cyber destruction to relaunching my minimum viable organization. You may have thousands of apps, as I mentioned, but you may only want to create back 50 apps, relaunch back 50 apps. That's what you care about. That'll make you compliant. That'll make you alive. That'll bring minimum services for your customers. And one very important KPI is the cost of inaction, the cost of a failed cyber recovery. Reputation, loss of customers, loss of market share, loss of product intellectual property, and permanent loss of viability. This cannot be a business KPI alone. This has to be down to the CISO and the CIO also.
But
DORA and NIS2 take care of it.
But here is a tricky question for you. Who owns the risk? Who is the owner of risk?
The people at the top. Unless they decide to transfer the risk and give the budget and give the resource to address the risk. You see, risk, whether it's exogenous or endogenous, whether it's central or whether it's residual, needs to be either accepted or transferred, or it needs to be treated. Those are the states of risk. Are the risk register with a clear risk owner and a plan. Again, the plan is I'm going to treat the risk this way, or I'm going to transfer the risk this way, or I'm going to simply accept the risk. So if I tell you cyber insurance, that is a method of externalizing the risk, transferring the risk from me as a bank to a cyber insurer like Swiss Re or Munich Re or Zurich Re, right? In this case, you have done something with the risk. You have put it out in the open and you have given everyone the opportunity to do something about it. Do not have implicit assumptions. Even the minor ones can result in total failure of your strategy when the risk becomes a real threat and a real cyber destruction.
That's these are good words. So it's kind of like also talks about the daily struggles of a CISO chasing down, you know, the owners of risk.
You remind me of one very recent engagement with a telecom head of infrastructure. He was not being given budget in one of these large countries around me. I drafted a risk acceptance form for him to take upstairs to the board. Now I know because I have seen this playbook before. The board of directors will say, no, this is not for us to accept. This is unacceptable risk. It will affect minimum viability of my telecom business in this very large market of 60 million people. Please, here's the budget, or rather, how much do you need? Can you fix this risk? The cost of inaction is too high. The cost of addressing it is what needs to be clearly outlined.
This is good advice. I think that out there are many CISOs struggling with this, and perhaps this is one of the way for many of us to follow. Thank you, Rauti, for coming to the show. It has been great talking to you. The topic is good. Topic is really, really necessary. And resilience is something that needs to be built even more and more today's weather. So that's how we roll. If you like this episode, then please like, follow, comment, tell your friends and tell your friends' friends that there is this cyber podcast out there that is worthwhile listening. If you have any topic that you would like for us to address or to go into more details, then we are very ready to do that. And on that function, thank you. And in 2 weeks' time, we'll be here again. Bye.